Welcome, everybody, to another edition of Spits and Suds. I'm Gavin Spittle of 105.3 The Fan. Thank you so much for joining us this offseason. Wow, what a week it's been with Brad Alberts, the Stars president and CEO, with Mike Arruzzioni, obviously one of our Olympic heroes joining us on Spits and Suds. And then we had a great conversation with Mike Hyka, the senior staff writer of DallasStars.com, Sean Shapiro, one of our co-hosts of Spits and Suds, joined us, and we had a great Jake Ottinger discussion. And now we are going to talk prospects with one of our Spits and Suds contributors who does such a great job. It's David Castillo of D Magazine and also his Substack at StarStack. Been getting a lot of positive feedback on David, and he joins us now. How are you, buddy?
A real, like, one of these things does not belong. You have this list of rock stars, and for some reason decide to go in descending order.
Not at all. No, come on. You know, one of the things I love seeing, and I've mentioned this on the program before, is when people comment, you can leave comments, and I encourage it on Apple or Spotify, wherever your podcasts are found, and they say, what I love about Spits and Suds is the various contributors to the program. So I love that. And what we're going to talk about falls in that category because on the previous program, Sean and I were talking about prospects, and one of the things Sean was mentioning was that, you know, he just kind of waits on the prospect game, and I do as well to a certain point. I like seeing these guys in Texas, but I did mention on the last program that 100 Degree Hockey is a great follow, and that you're a great follow as far as stars coming through the ranks. So I think it's important for Stars fans that want to hear this information about the future. Once again, I make the caveat like I did with Sean. We have been absolutely spoiled here, David, as of late. So for people, if they might not see like a deep prospect pool for the Dallas Stars, that's because they're all in the NHL over the last few years.
Yeah, real quick, I just want to say like how nice it is to be doing this in the afternoon as opposed to late at night, because late at night, whenever I'm talking, I can always see certain fall asleep. And it's nice to know that that's not going to happen anymore.
And then, of course, the other thing,
did you ask? Oh, sorry, what?
Quit pulling back the curtain.
Did you ask Sean about Gavin White? Like, why do you hate Gavin White, Sean?
You know, I didn't because I'm a little worried. Is it going to get back to Gavin? No, I mean, I did not want Sean's toes to curl up during the summer. So
we will talk about him, by the way. It's all good.
Yes. Absolutely. So on your Substack, you have listed your prospects, and coming in at number one is Liam Bixel, and it'll be an interesting year. Mike Hyka the other day said something really interesting as far as watching Bixel's development, and that we might see Bixel at some point if he continues to improve like the Stars say he will, but that's going to mean that the Stars will have to waive someone from their current NHL roster, as all of the current defensemen can't be sent down.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the rare good problems to have. I mean, it's for so many defenders at Bixel's age, most of what you see is, well, they're playing against their peers in a junior team somewhere in the CHL, whether it's the OHL, WHL, whatnot. And he's not doing that. He just played in the AHL, which is a top tier team. It's, you know, it's obviously a step below the NHL. And then, of course, played in Sweden in a professional capacity. So, yeah, sure, it is a long shot on paper. But the reason why I have him number one is simply because I think despite that, his experience and his performance at that level was good in the context of great, if that makes any sense. And I don't mean he's a great defenseman, just that the things that would normally hold him back, that would normally challenge him, that normally should keep him from looking as good as he did, like, did not stop him. And so my general philosophy is, something I mentioned on the Substack, which is, rather than look at players in terms of, or prospects, I should say, in terms of who's the best player available versus who do we need, I think it's more instructive to think about first principles. Do I want a top three forward or a top six? Would I prefer a top six to a middle six? Top four defenseman versus a middle six forward, et cetera, right? I think it gets really interesting when you kind of talk about like, oh, do I want a top four defenseman versus a top three forward? That's more interesting. But to me, I just felt like, and we'll get to Maverick Bourque, I think Bixel has all the ingredients of a proper top four defenseman. And that's what Dallas picked him for. And I think that's what they're already starting to see as well. I mean, Bixel like plays exactly the kind of game that you would want, that a coaching staff would want, which is good in his own zone, relatively territorial. He reads the play well. His temper is kind of its own topic, but for the most part, he's a guy that not only is he pretty talented just in all three zones, he's also physical and mean. And that's, I can't see any, what reason is there for the coaching staff not to love him while also bringing in a kind of relative blue chip talent to the Dallas Stars?
What I'm really interested, and he's kind of breaking the mold of what a lot of people say that follow the sport of hockey, in that larger size specific defensemen take longer to develop. A couple of examples: Zdeno Chara, when he was with the New York Islanders and really broke through when he became an Ottawa Senator, and then took it to the next level when he signed with Boston. So examples like that. Tyler Myers is another example. Took him a little while to get going. Even our own Jamie Oleksiak struggled at first, but towards the end, back before the expansion draft, I thought Jamie Oleksiak turned into a really good pairing with Miro Heiskanen. So it doesn't seem as though that saying, as far as bigger defensemen take longer to develop, is applying here to Liam Bixel, because it's a quick ascent.
Not only that, but I think it's funny you mentioned Oleksiak, because I really think both are kind of their own, are microcosms of their own era. I think a lot of what held Oleksiak back, and I'm so glad you asked me that, because now I get to rant about NHL development once more, which is like one of my favorite pastimes. Which is that Oleksiak, when I remember when watching him play, here was a guy that was clearly pigeonholed. Hey, you're a big guy. You, even though you're not necessarily like a big hitter, you can get in fights, you can play physical. You seem like a solid state. You should be a shutdown stay-at-home defenseman. And he was never that. And I always felt like that was the thing holding him back, which was this identity crisis. Here was a player that could jump into a play, had some like smooth hands, had some transition ability, but could never play to his strengths because, well, coaches wanted him to play a specific way. And I think, and that's why you've seen that change. I think that's why Bixel, for example, is not going to have that problem. He's not going to have that identity crisis, because you're seeing bigger defensemen develop those kind of small man skills quicker. It's something that a lot of prospect gurus and people that cover the draft kind of talk about, how that's changed. You look at sort of bigger defensemen that just kind of make this clean transition between like Jake Sanderson, Keandre Miller. I think the era of the hybrid shutdown defender is upon us, and Bixel is just a great representation of that, and one of the reasons why he's absolutely like number one for me. Because also, I think d the defensive position is just inherently so much more difficult and covers so much more responsibility, that I just look at his skills and the way he's able, like, there were times where, and I'm not trying to oversell Bixel, because yes, his offense is going to be limited. But there were times when he would make high level passes, and I can't help but think that even if he's not necessarily going to be an offensive defenseman, this is a guy that you're going to be able to play in all three zones, and just a real plug and play player. And that's why, honestly, like, I'm predicting he will absolutely play meaningful games for Dallas next year. And I don't even think it's going to be close. I think, yes, the contracts and the cap kind of, puts, kind of shuts him out and sort of makes it a harder transition than it otherwise would. But I think he's going to get there.
Number two on your list, you have Maverick Bourque. Obviously, he'll be with the big club. Jim Neal has been outspoken as far as while they aren't guaranteed roster spots, he does have big things ahead for Maverick Bourque and Logan Stankoven, who I guess you could kind of put as another candidate in the prospect list. He is eligible for the Calder Trophy, which is pretty awesome. But Maverick Bourque, really interesting development. Quebec Junior Hockey League, which at times has been criticized compared to the Western League or the Ontario Hockey League, and feel free to correct me if I'm wrong on this, David. And so the ascent and then to Texas struggled for about half the year. And then, wow, what a difference in the back half after the AHL All-Star game, and then just continued it throughout the entire last year, and then making his way up to Dallas for a game against Chicago, and then being inserted into the playoffs like he was, getting limited minutes, but the future is bright. One of the things that I really like to see about Maverick Bourque was, the offensive ability is there, but his faceoff draw has improved. And I was talking with Rich Peverly about that, and Peverly admitted that when he was helping in player development at that level, he was teaching Bourque about some face-off draws. And we all know Rich Peverly in a big spot was terrific on face-off draws.
Yeah, and he was also a better skater. Not only was he a better skater, but he became a much more rugged player along the walls. This is actually an observation that every now and then, I pretend to be a draft nerd. So I'm not really. So when I read David St. Louis's breakdown at EP Ringside, who was a proper amateur scout, writing about his ability on the wall and like why that's so important for forwards to be able to do that, like I felt vindicated, which is always a plus. And so Bourque has developed all the dimensions that you would want in your prospects, in your players. Also, somebody that still produced even when Logan Stankoven graduated. So I think there is maybe like a worry that like, well, how effective is he going to be without, sort of like a real blue chip talent next to him like that. And of course, playing in the NHL level should prove to be the one thing that I'll say about Bourque, which is that I do think Bourque's transition could be a little bit trickier because he is a sort of a premier playmaker. However, and like all playmakers, you never see the finished product until they are with the perfect set of line mates.
Yes.
And so, if, for example, if just again, and I'm not like, I don't have any insight into what exactly they're going to do in terms of like constructing the forwards. It's great that I think they pretty much have a spot for him, despite, just having the, two games of NHL experience. But I do think that Bourque could maybe like struggle a little bit if he's on a line with like Marchman and Sagan. Like, I mean, I'll be honest, like, I don't think that line's going to be very good. I think it can be productive, but if they did that, and I don't necessarily know why they would, right? Like, what would that mean for the top six? But I'm just saying, like, things could be a little hectic for him, but I don't think it's ever going to be because of him. I think it's just going to be because, well, in order for him to be fully, truly productive, in addition to a strong performer, he's going to be the right combination. It is going to need the right combination of players to really kind of maximize what he's capable of.
What I would love to see is, my thing is, I'd push Wyatt Johnson up to that first line. I want to see the pairing of Bourque, Stankoven, and Ben for a couple of reasons. The familiarity with Stankoven, and to me, that is currency that you can use to your advantage. I know they'll say, well, we practice all the time together, so you can put whoever with whoever. But there's no doubt that Marchman and Sagan clicked when Duchesne came to town. So at the same time, I would love that familiarity of Bourque and Stankoven. I also like that veteran physical presence, if need be, of Jamie Benn to protect two playmakers, but also two guys on the smaller side.
It's I agree, but I also think it would be relatively hard to really screw it up, because how would you feel about this, Gavin? How would you feel about, I don't know, like maybe Matt Duchene on Bork's wing? Bork is more of a natural center, and I realize Duchene played mostly center in Dallas. His biggest year in Nashville was the year he would transition to right wing. So I don't think it's crazy. Like, these are players that are pretty flexible to begin with. But would you be against Duchene with Bork?
No, I don't think so. I'd be okay to try that out as well. Yeah, that's fine. I think Matt Duchene can fit in numerous places, and I absolutely love that Matt Duchene's in a good space and feels confident in Dallas, wanted to be here. Was fully transparent after the playoffs as far as what he went through last year. I think, and I've talked to people about this, David. Matt Duchene took on a lot of leadership qualities. Not saying that he didn't in Ottawa or Nashville or elsewhere that he was, but at the same time, I think Duchene fit in really well here in Dallas. And that's why I feel as though if he was paired with a Bork, the arm would go around and say, just, we're going to do great things.
And it's kind of crazy to think that, like, if Dallas wanted, like, if well, not if they wanted, but like, there's a parallel universe where Bork, Bixel, and Stankoven are on the roster to begin the year simultaneously, and you have like three guys like vying for the Calder. It's just because, like, we'll get to all the prospects below Bixel and Bork, and as you mentioned, it's important to keep perspective. Dallas does not. Is not going to have a very good prospect pool once these players graduate, and that's because they're just way ahead of schedule. Like, a lot of their best prospects currently are way ahead of schedule, and nothing illustrates that more than the fact that they could have three players in the Calder run-in if they wanted, or in a parallel universe, because at least two of them are going to be kind of battling each other for that title.
So let's move to number three. You had Hemming on the list, just drafted by Dallas. So we see that much in Hemming as a prospect. So already so quick.
Yeah, I think so. Part of this is kind of by default, though. It's he is the sort of like third best, and he falls into a tier two, right? So that's we kind of tend to, like, most people tend to arrange these prospect rankings in tiers. Your tier one players are your true like NHL quality talents. Tier two players, the ones that can develop into that. And so Hemming is definitely a tier below Bixel and Bork, but also, again, just default. It's like you have so many wingers, especially forwards in Dallas, that have already graduated. Hemming, in addition to the fact that Dallas doesn't really have any forwards that are interested beyond the big three, right? Johnston, Stankoven, and Bork. But now they do. I think Hemming is a genuinely interested player. Now we know Dallas is going to be able to monitor him much more closely. But it's like I use these two terms. Whenever it comes to prospect writing in general, right? I like to kind of split players up into generalists and specialists. Generalists being kind of having like a broad spectrum of skills, like a Wyatt Johnston, and specialists kind of having a more specific spectrum of skills, like a Thomas Harley. It's not meant as a good or a bad thing. Hemming to me is a pure specialist. His primary role is to be a shooter. However, within that, a very layered player between his quickness and two-way responsibility. And so he's easily Dallas's best pure winger. And Dallas doesn't really have that. They don't have these specialists. And that's part of what's made them like a great drafting team, right? Which is they've found these players that are not just dynamic, but they also are two-way players. Hemming still fits that sort of, but he's more in that, I think, kind of in that sort of specialist category of, hey, here's someone whose primary purpose is to enter the zone quickly, threaten with a great shot, and that can be enough. Like, there's room on a roster for players like this. And even though I think he's going to be more of a middle six forward, he's still going to be a really solid player. And I love his profile. He was number four, like, in terms of the forwards I wanted most. I had a top 10 that Dallas could pick. He was number four at draft day. So I've always liked his game. And obviously they did too.
Aaron Minetnian, 19 years old, drafted in the fourth round by the Stars.
Did you say Minetnean?
I did.
Like, I
We're going to
always want to say
pronounce it.
Minishin.
Yeah, we're going to pronounce it five different ways. Sean and I were talking. This is going to be Haskinen, Heiskanen. This is going to be that.
Yeah, it's anyway. So yeah, number four, mainly because he's one of the rare defensemen that Dallas has. Not just because he's a right shot, but again, fits in like with Bixell, he fits into that category of a real sort of hybrid transition defenseman, defensive defenseman, but he still has, kind of relatively blue chip skills. Like I think he's a fantastic skater. He really like he's got a powerful stride, but he still has agility. There are times when his edge work even kind of reminds me of like Harley at times. I don't want to go that far, but the point is like he's a really good skater, but plays a sturdy game. He's not really interested in necessarily creating offense, which is fine. But I don't think that's what your best defenders in the modern era need. And of course, he also got great experience, right? This year he played with Carter Gauthier, from Anaheim, Will Smith, who's going to be making the
Yeah,
jump in San
good
Jose, and
program in
Ryan
Boston
Leonard.
College.
Yeah, exactly. With Boston. And also there are fancy stats people for prospect data. The underlying numbers loved Manadian's game, and it's easy to see why. He's a really fluid mover of the puck. And so I'm super stoked about it. Like he's one of the guys that I think can develop into a tier one player. Pretty much the only dude that I think can do that.
So I asked Sean about, because Sean is following the 2024 World Junior Summer Showcase that's happening. And he said, I'm not a big prospect guy. He's like, but I project him like Joel Hanley.
It's so unbelievably disrespectful. I mean, I guess not. Like, if
Love
you're a
Sean.
player who can
No,
only
we.
play in the playoffs but never the regular season, hey, I guess you've made it.
I mean, Joel Hanley has carved quite the career. Pretty awesome. And I give Joel Hanley a lot of credit. When he needed to go in, I mean, he was there. There's no doubt about it. And that seventh, eighth defenseman nowadays, it's kind of like the second running back in the NFL. I mean, they're going to be used. Okay. So,
Completely, by the way,
yeah.
completely just spoiled that Aaron Minichian hype.
No, I mean it's okay. But let's pull back the curtain, because one of the things is that I think prospects take that step when they're in Texas, and I can really see them on that level, because I've talked to a lot of people and I'm like, what's the difference between American Hockey League, the Texas Stars, and the Dallas Stars? And the word that comes up all the time is consistency. So what when you're looking at players, David, whether they're playing in Europe or whether they're in the OHL, the Western League, the Quebec League, or whatever league it may be, at the junior levels, what are you looking at that makes you feel as though they have the potential to be big? Because the top prospects in those leagues, they all look amazing. The ice is wide open.
I think it's what you said. It's consistency, but also I would say just as critically context, right? Because there are plenty of players that simply, I've always been a big believer in sort of teammates heavily influence it, teammates influence performance more than competition. And so there are times where if I'm watching a player and I feel like they're clearly being anchored by, this was right. So this was a big thing during, I can't remember what year it was when Alex Turcotte played. Whenever a player is clearly being carried and still, to their credit, taking advantage of the position that they're in, you absolutely want to identify that. If they are clearly driving the forward trio or the defense pair, that's something else that you want to look for. And so within that, I think whenever I'm looking at, I mean, there are a lot of different things, right? Whenever you're looking individually at the player, how well do they make reads? How well do they process the play? Are they comfortable along the walls? which most of NHL hockey is played on, right? That's I would imagine that's way less true in juniors, where it's more free flowing. There's a lot of quiet ice, so to speak. Whereas in the NHL, as that Dallas Eakin stat, you know, he kind of once revealed, which is that 80% of hockey is played along the walls, along the exterior of the ice. And so I think it's really crucial for that, to me, is what I'm looking for. And if they can show me consistency within those areas that I think really need to translate, then that's when I'm interested. Whereas, you know, it's obviously not a scientific process, but I think there are still things that a player can show you. I mean, most of them have been playing for years, right? So one of the reasons why I always, take cracks at like this sort of analogy of the NHL, you know, the draft is a crapshoot. It's not. It's like somebody came up with a better analogy on Twitter. They mentioned kind of the analogy to, like, say, the stock market, right? Where you have like assets that are, have varying degrees of value, and unknown assets with varying degrees of value. But for the most part, you have a sense of who they are. And I think that's more or less kind of how I interpret prospects and whether or not those skills can translate, which is, if I'm looking at those things that I think are more typical in the NHL and how games are played and how systems oriented they are versus juniors, which is less systems and less wall work.
Okay, drafted in 2022 in the second round, had a lot of people talking about him when he was in juniors, makes the step up to Texas, 57 games played, 23 points. Christian Kyrou.
And don't forget, a point per game player in the playoffs.
Yeah, well, all right. I'll go there.
I like that.
That's good. I mean, Calder Cup, that's good.
Kyrou was a player that I did not like when he was drafted, for reasons that people, I'm sure, are already aware of. And didn't like when I was, like, early in the season, I was just like, dude, this guy's awful. Like, what did Dallas see in him? And then he started putting it together and really started putting it together in the way that you would have expected and not expected. You know, the sort of the puck handling is there, right? Like, Kyrou is going to have a tough road because he's a lot like Lundqvist in some ways. He's like Lundqvist if he were just like an elite puck handler, where he's not really a great skater, a bit undersized, but of course he could just make fantastic plays. And so he started to do that towards the end of the year, really started to kind of develop into his own comfort zone. And, you know, even though I think players like him, these kind of smallish puck movers are really being phased out in the game, he has enough chops just in terms of like how clever he can be with a puck, that I think there's a long shot there that's interesting. My issue with Kyrou is I don't know what the path towards the NHL is for him. Like, you know, even if he kind of breaks out next year and continues to excel, how does he even get to the NHL?
All right, give me a couple of names before we go that to keep an eye on your prospect list that maybe a lot of people aren't talking about yet.
So Gavin White is my favorite. Gavin White is, listen, like, if you're just looking for a player who is going to excite you with their athleticism, pay attention to Gavin White in Texas. Like, he has that. That's one of the reasons why I noticed him. Like, it's not because I think he's going to make the NHL and because he's a great prospect and you know, you should be bothering Sean Shapiro, he's so good. No, it's because I think he has some interesting traits and he's also just kind of fun to watch. I think there's potential there, but he's also going to be 22 in November. So we are talking about a much older prospect.
Yeah.
And even though it's not a hard and fast rule, you know, typically the older a player is and the longer they've been in the juniors, well, the more likely they're just simply going to stay there because it's never going to happen. I mean, you know, your best prospects tend to be ready earlier. I'm really fascinated by Antonio Strangis because he didn't play a lot of games, didn't play a lot of minutes. I guess he played a decent amount of games. We didn't play a lot of minutes. The coaching staff didn't seem to trust him, but he still scored 11 goals. And when I watch him, he kind of reminds me, he really does remind me of Gurionov, where just he, the talent's there, even the work is there, but the smarts aren't there. Smarts, I don't like to use that word. I would say like spatial awareness, right?
Yeah, that
Because
makes sense.
I don't like setting up players into this sort of dumb versus smart like dichotomy. That's silly. Spatial awareness is not there, and he makes just some bizarre decisions with the puck. So he's going to be fascinating to watch. And I also think he's pretty responsible. Like I've seen him make good defensive plays. So it's almost hard to believe like what could be holding him back. If he works hard and he's super talented and he scored 11 goals in like 10 minutes, then what could be the, well, just the fact that like he just kills his own plays is part of the problem. And another player that I think is worth mentioning, besides the German goaltender whose name nobody can pronounce,
Correct.
I say Arno Tiefensee, and the DEL. The other one I think is interesting is Tristan Bertucci. Once again, I don't know what it is about Dallas's pick of defensemen after the first round that I'm always frustrated with. Bertucci was another guy that I did not like where he was picked. I didn't like who was still on the, I loved who was still on the board. And it on paper, yes, he took a step back. And for those that like haven't seen him, he's another one of these really interesting defensemen that kind of defies, I think, typical convention where he's offensively capable, but that's not necessarily kind of what his role is with the team. In this case, with the Flint Firebirds, I joked, please stop scouting this team, Dallas, because that's, Ty Dillandrea being the other pick from the Flint Firebirds. He was less productive, 50 points in 63 games last year, 44 and 61 this year. But the underlying numbers, his transition data, his just overall value was much higher. And I think he's definitely a guy that sort of, he's one of the few players that I think is developing along, not just where he should be, but a little ahead of the curve. And if you're only looking at his production, I think you're going to miss that.
You know, one of the things that you retweeted on your star stack, the 2024 front office confidence that someone tweeted out, and Florida for this person was based on the New York Times. Florida, Dallas was number two, Tampa number three. That's a good list.
Well, I mean, like it's a little weird because they're sandwiched in between two cup winners.
Yeah.
So, I think that yes, it does speak to Dallas's future. And when you look at their prospects, like if we were just, let's say we were doing an under 25 list, Dallas would just knock it out of the park. They would be number one, right? Heiskanen, Robertson, Ottinger, Wyatt Johnson, Logan Stanko, and Bork Bixell. Like they're just, that is why I think people kind of, which is ironic because I feel like Stars fans are not super confident going into this next season. And I feel like what has biased them has been, well, the kind of like the Adrift offseason, which I get. And I agree with most of that. But it goes back to look at the prospects that Dallas has now, the prospects that have way ahead of the curve have already graduated. And that's why I am drinking that Kool-Aid because I do feel like if they take those next steps, which is typical for very, very young players, they're going to get better. So assuming that, well, then this team is going to get better. And losing one dude on the blue line is not going to be the difference between success or oblivion, right? Right. I think it was very well deserved. It's a little, like I said, it looks a little funny because that's why I made like this silly Dan Marino comment, because it looks a little funny them being sandwiched in between two teams that won cups recently. Dallas is not, but it's not for a lack of trying or lack of prudence in the front office. As far as I'm concerned, they've done everything they possibly could. Again, you could make the argument that some of these moves this offseason, like we could, I was not that, and I've gone on record as feeling like I do like Matt Dumba. I do think like he's going to have potential, and I think people are going to be surprised. But then I saw the Oliver Shillington pickup from Colorado, and then I was like, you know what? That sucks.
Yeah.
Dallas absolutely should have given him that contract.
Yeah, I think It's going to be interesting. Let's see. I mean, maybe they're the ones that can turn around Lyubushkin and he can become a solid, consistent NHL player. They would be the first.
Real quick, he was really good with Morgan Rielly. And again, I know that's like a small sample size, but just saying, I mean, like Dallas has a quote unquote Morgan Rielly, but in no disrespect to Rielly, who I think is a very good offensive defenseman, but Harley and Heiskanen are to me like way better. If Lyubushkin can look good next to Rielly, I, you know, just saying.
No, it would be great. Big physical defenseman. And if Matt Dumba can have a, I don't want to say like comeback year, because he was decent last year, but it wasn't the Matt Dumba that people were used to seeing with the Minnesota Wild. And the question is, you know, what will we see this year for Matt Dumba? So, you know, if that's the case and both perform above what the expectations are, I think the Stars defense will be just fine. And as Sean and I just talked about in another podcast, Jake Oettinger and what he's working on, because it's a big year for the netminder for the Stars, contracts up. Will he play for Team USA? There's just a lot of different things that Jake Oettinger has to play for this year. So that will be interesting as well. Okay, the Substack that you can subscribe to is at StarStack, and that is the handle on Twitter. If you want to follow David personally, at David Castillo AC. That's at David Castillo AC. Obviously, read his articles in D Magazine, and D Magazine does such a great job producing stories. They hire people like David, they hire Sean, they hire Robert Tiffin, just a bunch of cool hockey writers. And kudos, stick tap to the staff at D Magazine for what they've been able to pull off. David, thank you so much. This was a very interesting prospect update, giving us what the future might hold for our Dallas Stars.
Thank you, and get hype.
Get hype. For David Castillo, I'm Gavin Spittle. Thank you once again. It's been a busy week on Spits and Suds, and for good reason. We just continue to pump out the episodes, and it's because of you. So spread the word that there's a local hockey program, and it's called Spits and Suds right here on 105.3 The Fan. Have a great day, everyone.